I thank you for the opportunity to present this. Localized states are controversial in relativistic quantum mechanics, as you've maybe already heard. The corresponding field is not localized, and it has been claimed that there are problems with invariance and causality, no photon position operator, or number density. But experimentalists count photons every day, and it is straightforward, as I've argued, to define a basis of localized states on a hypersurface that describes a photon counting experiment. So this is what I'll call localized states. Not that the field is localized, but that they satisfy this orthonormality condition. So I'll just say a few words about notation, and then photon counting detectors, localized bases in Minkowski, Rindler, and Unruh coordinates, and just a brief, an initial application on absorption by an accelerated detector. So I guess there's no surprises in my notation here. Eta and C are the Rindler space, time and space, and and I've actually used used little a for the vector potential. And I'll refer to the indefinite inner product, and I want it both in coordinate space and in k-space. So my second last submission to the archive was called was basically on photon counting POVM. And this is a kind of a summary. A semiconductor detector counts photons if it's thick enough to absorb whatever photons are incident on it. And absorption is proportional to omega, but a penetration depth is proportional to 1 over omega. The Glauber probability for an atom to absorb a photon is the expectation value of E dagger E, which is proportional to omega. So it's got energy, but this decays as you go into the semiconductor. So if you actually integrate over the atoms in the semiconductor, the omega dependence drops out. Now, it's not quite that simple. If you actually want to locate these photons accurately, this X basis will count the same number of total photons as the K basis, but perhaps ideally you'd like them to count them at exactly the instant and position where they enter the detector, but if you look at a pulse there and the frequency separation from the center frequency divided by the bandwidth, then you end up with a time delay in that case of a few optical cycles. But it makes sense to define a photon counting operator. And this is the covariant form, which is just the integrand in the covariant inner product converted to an operator, really. So photon number and probability density are meaningful concepts in the context of a photon counting experiment. Beyond that, well, that's another story. So to avoid multiple counting, we should count photons on a hypersurface. And there's two kinds of hypersurfaces, space-like and time-like. And usually in quantum field theory, people want to work on space-like hypersurfaces. So I've invented a Gedanken experiment that for this type of hypersurface. At any time t, a photon should be somewhere in space. Imagine an array of transparent photon counting detectors. I've got a diagram next. Everywhere in space, and the photon propagates freely until you turn them all on, and then you find out where it is. But that's not the way the experiment's done, of course. The experiment's actually done on a time-like hypersurface, And what you do is put your detector in one place and you wait for the photon to arrive. And since I'm only actually working one spatial dimension, then all you can record is the time as with regard to this talk, but the other paper was more three-dimensional. So this is my space-like Gedanken experiment. I just sketched it as if there was a single photon in a plane wave state initially, but in principle this detector can count 0, 1, 2 photons, whatever. And so the photons propagating, I didn't try and draw waveforms, and suddenly I turn on the detectors and the photon's somewhere, so it'll be counted, and so it got counted in this pixel, and after that time, if I don't do anything else, I have a zero photon state. And this is the more realistic experiment. I've still just sketched this as if it were a plane wave. But so we don't know when it's going to arrive, but the detector's sitting here, and all of a sudden there's a bleep, and it's recorded that there was a photon. And the this basis actually splits into left of the this is the world line of the detector, so it's just sitting in one place for all time. And the basis splits into left of the detector and right of the detector, actually, so it never passes the detector. Oh, maybe. There's a problem with this, of course, in that you can't neatly separate positive and negative frequencies. And this is just to show that only the modes that are present in the initial state actually matter. And these propagate, there's nothing pathological about these states. The localization really is in the basis, and it never leaves the hypersurface that it lives on, which in this case is the world line of the detector. And if these detector arrays are moving relative to the observer, the time-like detector, in other words, a real detector, just moves along this line with a speed beta because I've taken C equals 1. But this curve for the space-like detector, what this actually means is that the pixels aren't turned on all at the same time. They're turned on sequentially. And so I want to be able to do this in Rindler coordinates. So again, these are pretty standard. So the space-like detector is this array of pixels. I need to define, separate it into wedge 1 and wedge 2. And is every pixel on this curve has the exact same velocity, but that depends on the Rindler time eta. And the world line of the accelerated detector, which is also a hypersurface that I can define a basis on, is the hyperbola. So now I'll look at these plane waves and localized states. And I'm actually not going to deal with polarization, and I'm in one dimension. So, of course, this could just as well be a massless Klein-Gordon particle as a photon. So this is an ordinary plane wave with covariant normalization according to and using the indefinite inner product, so that if these are delta functions, I haven't discretized K, and their scalar product is positive or zero. And usually you just define the positive frequency states, but to get the negative frequency states, I just need to take the complex conjugate, and using the indefinite inner product, that you get a negative number. and cross terms are zero. But that's textbook. I mean, this is what I get when I open up Burrell and Davies. So I have a recipe to convert these plane wave states in position coordinates to localized states in k coordinates. And the recipe is just that I have to move the root omega from the bottom to the top because the inner product looks different in k space than it does in x space. And then I'm interchanging the roles of x and t and omega and k, because now it's a definite position and time, and just as and expressed in k space. And I also changed the sign because this is a definite reference position. You'll see what that looks like on the next slide. So applying this recipe to the or to the Minkowski plane waves, it's straightforward to verify by calculating the inner product in k space that they satisfy exactly the expected, have the expected inner products. They're orthonormal, but now in terms of position coordinates rather than k coordinates. And if they're negative frequency, you get negative number. If you mix them, you get zero. And this is the expression in k space. If you want to write this down in position space, I generally won't do it because it's messier, but I can write it as Fourier an integral over the Fourier coefficients. And you can see, first of all, that this is not local because it's going to have a root omega in it. And you can also see why I needed to reverse the sign, because this is just a reference time where the state is localized, and this is the reference position. So I'm going to do the same thing for the Rindler plane waves. And again, I open up Burrell and Davies, and I find what I have to do to write down plane waves in Rindler coordinates. Of course, all I really have to do, at least in the first wedge, is make sure I use Rindler time and position. And then for the frequency and wave vector, I've used capital letters. But in my notation, the prime means a definite value. So this is a definite wave vector and a definite frequency, but as a function of time and position. And then you need to define it in the second wedge, and there the time, according to a Minkowski observer, runs backwards, so I need to reverse the sign. But now I'm going to define localized states using the recipe that I used for the Minkowski localized states. And it's straightforward because I just, omega moves from here to here, prime gets exchanged. And then again, it's straightforward to verify that you get the expected inner products. They're orthonormal, in other words. So these are there. I talked about the space-like basis, but a person could also define a time-like basis. So there's a basis of pixels in the wedge one, a basis in wedge two. They aren't turned on all at the same time. They're turned on sequentially. If I'd have been really tricky with my graphics, I guess I'd have made them different sizes, but okay. And this has a problem that you can't separate positive and negative frequencies. And I can do it for the Unruh basis too, but I'm less enthused about the Unruh basis after what I've heard this week, but I did use it to get started on a quick application. So here's a few preliminary calculations with this basis. So first I'll just consider is absorption of a photon from the Minkowski vacuum by a Rindler detector. And you can see, though, that there's problems with using the space-like basis, because you're going to spend a fair bit of time doing this measurement, and if you want to integrate over time, well, you run out of this off this basis pretty fast. So I kind of think you should be on this basis. So this, the way I did this was exactly from the 1984 paper by Unruh and Wald, except I integrated over wave vectors. And so this annihilates a photon from the Minkowski vacuum, which of course isn't a vacuum at all according to the Rindler observer. And then if I take this annihilation operator and express it in Unruh annihilation operators, of course the advantage is that the Unruh operators really do see a vacuum, so it can't annihilate a particle, it can only create one, so I only end up with a one photon state that's easier to look at. And this is just the warm-up exercise. I mean, not that I'm presenting more here, but okay, so I project this onto the Unruh basis at different points, so at a different coordinate. So this is A to prime, this is C prime, this is C. So in other words, you notice it's now in the primarily in the second wedge too. And what I get, I think, is no surprise. It's not localized. I mean, my localized states would have been really tall and sharp. But of course, there's this thermal factor. And so you can't really expect, if you're absorbing from the Minkowski vacuum, or that looks like a thermal vacuum, you can't really expect to get a localized state. But I was kind of puzzled by why this is so far above the zero axis. And that's because of this divergence in the thermal factor as the frequency goes to zero. And if you put in a cutoff, it brings it down. If I calculate this in the time-like basis, then I'm confined to only half the frequency axis, and there's further delocalization just due to this effect. And because this particle was emitted, I'm being consistent with my notation and actually calling these frequencies negative, because that just means here that the particle was emitted. And I also saw what it looked like it looks very similar. I mean, the interpretation of the first one was the photon was absorbed at eta prime by the Rindler observer, but it's seen in the opposite wedge at eta, at C by the Minkowski or the Unruh observer, but it looks very similar if I have absorption in both wedges. I guess I don't really need to do that one because I'm running out of time. So I'll just go to the conclusion. So localized bases, which are POVMs, describing small photon-counting hyperpixels, were constructed in Rindler and Unruh coordinates. Here, what I mean by localized is that the inner product is a delta function, so it's zero if they're not the same point. And the one that, if you want to separate positive and negative frequencies, then you should work on a space-like hypersurface, but you can also construct a basis on the time-like hypersurface. And the point, I guess as I went through the talk, that I didn't emphasize enough was, you can still, even on the time-like basis, really know whether you've got emission or absorption, because your initial state might be purely positive frequency. I mean, you don't have to assume that there are any negative frequencies in the actual psi. So you can separate positive and negative frequencies that way. Okay, next